I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
Did I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
What? Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong?
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Great to have you with me. Just coming back from Houston, the Dean Martin song. Probably don't remember that. It was in the 60s. Gone to Houston. Back here in the studios. A couple of things. I've been told, I guess, by EWTN that they've established this. I guess I don't know if they were reading the June issue of Purgatory Today, but they said that I'm the only host they have that can take days off your purgatory because I can be so irritating to listen to. And if you persevere to listen through your irritation, the days mount up. Very nice to have you with me. The show's going to be a little different today. I get a lot of e-persons, from all over the place, pushing guests. And as I've said often, you folks are my guests. You're the ones who make the show. When this particular individual came to my attention a few weeks back, we had a little trouble negotiating schedules. I jumped at it. Absolutely jumped at it. For me to have a hero in the faith, this guy's one of them. No question about it. I will not keep you in suspense too much longer. But I have to tell you, he's brilliant. And I'm going to do an opening monologue, which probably is going to make me feel a little bit like we're going from Wheel of Fortune to Jeopardy within a couple of minutes. Gone from kindergarten to a PhD in philosophy here in a short period of time through the break. But we will get to that. And if, with any luck, I can persuade him to stay a little longer than he originally had planned. Now, I don't know what kind of time we'll have for questions, but let me give you the number just in case. 877-573-7825. Not an easy number to remember. It bounces all over the place. Kind of like the our national anthem. 877-57-EQUAL. Is the number to call if you want to talk to this gentleman, and I got to believe you're going to want to, but I may be perfectly selfish and talked with him completely myself. Opening monologue. Peter came to Jesus and he said, "How many times should I forgive my brother?" Now, he didn't say anything about his sister, but he just mentioned his brother. And then Peter says, seven? Now, I got to wonder if Peter was essentially trying to tell Jesus, "I've learned something following you, you know. The rabbis say only three. Three strikes and you're out. But I know you, Lord, you're merciful. So I'm going to kick that up by a factor of 100 and some %. I'm going to say seven." Jesus said 70 times seven, which is basically always, perfectly. And even if it were only 490, that's still a big number to forgive. Anybody who's lived a long time knows you can go through that 490 pretty quick. And I started thinking, maybe is there some loophole here? Some way I can get around this? I think I got it. Matter of fact, my loophole is so big, you could drive a forgiveness truck through it. Which is, I don't think I really have to forgive maybe 50% or more of the time. How so? I've noticed that when I take offense, or I think somebody has hurt me in some way. Now, the last time I was really hurt without words, I was 17 years old. Our basketball team had just beaten a top-ranked basketball team from the area, knocked them out of the state tournament. And their people were really upset. And I'm walking with my date down the street, celebrating, when I got sucker punched. Side of the face. Boom. I didn't go down. I turned and looked at this guy. And he took off. Because I guess he figured if he sucker punched me that hard and I didn't go down, I just turned and looked. Maybe he didn't want to mess. But that was really the last time I've ever been hurt physically. Not counting sports, which I do to myself. It's words. It's people's words. And people's words have to be interpreted. And you have to take offense by them. Motivations have to be interpreted. We get upset much more quickly when we attribute motives to people that we think are hurtful or personal attacks on us, personal comments. I'll give you a small example. This was some time back when we had all the little kids at home, and my wife told me, she's gone out for the evening, and she said, I got my mom coming over. I said, well honey, I'm here. And she said, yeah, I know. That's why I got my mom coming over. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. You know, I can do this. I can handle this. Is she implying I'm inept? Is that what the message is here? I knew most of their names, and they need fed? When? So I was getting myself, you know, irritated because of this, the implications. But, however, trying to be a good husband, faith-filled Christian, I said, well, okay, I'm going to forgive her. I'm going to forgive her. I'm not going to get upset about this. I'll just go upstairs. She's getting ready to go out. I'll just go upstairs, and I'll kind of sort through the issue. But bottom line is, that was one of my 70 times 7. I was going to forgive. She tells me that her reason for having her mother come over was so that I could have some time to work on my parenting book. Like that was supposed to make me feel better. It wasn't motivated in any way to make a comment upon my ineptness as a father by myself. But here I was, really ready. I mean, I'm gearing myself up. I'm ready to forgive this woman. I'm ready to do the Christian thing. That's right. And there was nothing to forgive. It was hanging solidly in psychological midair. There was no offense. I wonder how many times in my mind I take offense because I misread a motive. Or simply because I take it too prickly. Okay, so somebody said something snarky. All right. If I'm not offended by it, I don't have to forgive it. I only have to forgive it when I think I've been hurt or assaulted verbally or impugned in some way. And I got to wondering, how many times is that? I'll bet it's a good proportion of that 70 times 7. I'll bet it's 50%+. And I probably can get that percent higher if I do what our Lord wants me to do, which is to not be so easily offended. To not be on the lookout, the hypervigilance for somebody's remark that doesn't sit well with me. Or some assault, as I see it, on my personality or my way. How dare they? They shouldn't say that. And the more I cling to that kind of offensive talk in my mind, the more I think, well, all right, I better forgive now. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to forgive. But I always got to ask the prefatory question. I've been waiting to use that word. Which is there anything to forgive? And I got a feeling. Well, okay, I don't like feelings. Well, I do, but they're not reliable guys. I got a thinking that there's a lot more of that than I realize. And I got to start paying attention. Because at the very least, I won't blow through that 490 in a couple of months. You know, I can stretch it out. Maybe over a year. When I come back, I'm going to do something very different on this program. Matter of fact, I cannot recall the last time I had a guest other than callers on this program. I've read many of this gentleman's books. Having 10 kids, my IQ pretty much dipped by about 14 points, cumulative deterioration. One of the ways I recouped some of those points was to read this man's books. He's got a lot of them. He's a hero for me. He really is. I don't want to get too gushy here. I don't want to sound like a groupie. Dr. Peter Kraft. Boston College. Philosopher. Thinker. Man of letters. Lots of letters. I was delighted when I had the chance to interview him. And I've got some suggestions for him. For retitling his book. I don't know if he's thought about this, but I got some ideas here, especially given this man's love of baseball. So when we come back, you stick with me, because I know if you put up with some of my thoughts, you're going to hear a lot deeper ones. I'm Dr. Ray.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Greg Arendi, a five-tooled Major League center fielder trapped in an aging psychologist's body. Well, Dr. Kraft was not with me in that first segment as he listened to my gushing accolades about him. He is too humble. As a matter of fact, he's one of the few people, I believe, whose humility rivals my own. This is going to be quite a battle here in the virtue of humility. But you folks know that you are my guests. You make the show. But this gentleman, when I found out he would be available to come on the show, I jumped all over it, flat out. I said, I've got to talk to Dr. Kraft. Last time I talked with him, he was in Akron, Ohio. He was giving a talk at St. Sebastian's. He was done around 10 o'clock at night, late at night. That's an hour past my bedtime. The man stayed up for another hour and a half to talk with us for clips on the TV show. That's the kind of guy he is. Probably still body surfs. Dr. Kraft, you there, sir?
Yes, I'm here to listen to your gush and to congratulate you on your humility. We're both very proud of that.
Thank you. You know, I got a different title for your book.
Oh, good.
Given that you have this love of baseball, and of course our Pope Leo does, Maybe you should have titled it From Yankee to Fenway or From the Mick to the Yaz.
Well, my wife was born a couple blocks from Yankee Stadium, so when we got married, we realized that mixed marriages never work, so one of us would have to have a conversion. So she's at least a mild Red Sox fan.
Was that a harder conversion than yours from Calvinism?
It was easy. She didn't care that much about baseball. I cared a lot about theology.
Now, you've written 100-some books here. By the way, I don't want to...
Yeah.
I don't want to impress you. If I can brag a little bit... Last night, in preparation for this interview, I finished a 230-page book, and that's a lot of coloring. Barely got done by midnight, you know. So I have a question. Why did you wait till book number 100 and plus to write this story?
Because I think that autobiographies are usually very misleading, and it's not a waste of time. Something like diaries or Facebook. And Mark Brumley at Ignatius Press never gave up and finally persuaded me. He said, C.S. Lewis did one. I said, well, I'm not better than him, so I guess I can do that. I wrote a book on suffering, which is not nearly as good as The Problem of Pain, when my editor said, we don't want a great book. We want just a mediocre book on the same subject. And I said, okay, I can do that.
Well, did it ever persuade you that when you've written 100-some books on all kinds of topics, many of which I've read, and by the way, I told you, I corrected them for grammar and sent some of them back to you. Did you get those?
Oh, yeah. You get a B+, and 80 years old in purgatory.
But I noticed, too, that you had to figure, okay, this is how the guy thinks. How did he come religiously to think this way?
Well, by thinking simply and commonsensically, I'm not as clever as most philosophers, but I'm cleverer than many non-philosophers, so I'm sort of in the middle. And I think when God addresses us publicly, he usually addresses the middle people. One of the great philosophers, Kant, said that he was a very popular teacher, and they asked him how come he would attract so many students. And he said, well, I don't talk to the upper echelon because they can think for themselves, and I don't talk to the lower echelon because they're hopeless, but then 80% in the middle are the ones that I talk to. I think God did the same thing.
Didn't talk to the upper echelon because he can't, you know, is what I was thinking. You did some things in the book I thought that were particularly creative. One of the things you did, and I don't know if anybody's ever accused you of this, but you have a boatload of Paul Harvey turns of the phrases. Does that just kind of
like Paul Harvey?
Yeah, it does. It comes natural. For example, you had one phrase you said. You called it childlike grown-upness. What a great juxtaposition!
Oh, that's Augustinian. That's paradox. That's Chestertonian. The world is full of paradox. God's a punster.
But you did this all over the place. You know, the other thing you did too. You had all these ellipses, insights, kind of jumping out of your everyday experiences. One of the things you said. You said that children ask the toughest questions. Adults don't ask questions anywhere near as tough as kids.
Well, I found that to be true for the same reason you did. We're both parents.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know if you did what I did. I always just said, go ask your mom. She knows. She knows these things.
Well, for anything practical, that's what I did too.
I want to know how
many questions left.
How did you remember the details that you did about all these guys that had an influence in your life? I don't even remember the names of my profs. Not only did you remember the names, you remember bits of their personality. You remember what color socks they wore.
Well,
how did you do that?
The answer to that is very simple. I have ADD, which gives me a very selective memory. I can remember anything that really turns me on. I can remember poems very easily. I cannot remember numbers. I have to translate telephone numbers from numbers into letters. So I remember the stuff in the past that had an influence on me and not the things that should have had an influence on me but didn't. That's an easy one. You're a psychologist. You can ask harder questions than that.
Is this why you've forgotten my name so many times?
I think so, Dr. G.
Roy Gannutti. Roy Gannutti.
Mm-hmm.
You said this. I was in the evangelical world for a while, and we knew two things. We knew that Jesus was Lord and the Catholic Church was wrong. And so many times, if the Catholic Church said it, it was automatically wrong because it was like Donald Trump. You can't say something and your enemies are going to tell you you're wrong no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You said this in the book. We all firmly believe that the Pope was the Antichrist and that the Catholic Church was the satanic whore of Babylon, mentioned in the book of Revelation. My parents believed that too. Now, you came from the farthest reaches of anti-Catholicism. No, whore of Babylon, that's
not,
Jack.
Not
that's
really.
Jack. No?
Not really. Not really. My parents and my denomination, Reformed Church in America, usually believe that, but not that firmly. Calvinists are more theologically educated than fundamentalists. So they've got a Bible and they've got a history and a theology that makes them on semi-level ground. For instance, the vast majority of Calvinists that I know, and I know thousands of them, do not believe what Calvin believed about predestination, that God predestines half the human race to hell in the same way that he predestines half to heaven. They don't believe in a double predestination because that clearly contradicts the Bible.
I always wanted to meet a true Calvinist who said, I believe in predestination and I'm not one of the ones predestined.
Hmm.
You know, I'm going to hell. Now that's a true, that's like a fundamentalist, you know, cut your arm off if it offends you.
Yeah.
Here's something.
That sounds like a question I asked my father once when I was a smart alecky little kid. I'm not little or a kid anymore, but I'm still smart alecky. The question is that, did God predestine all the pains as well as all the pleasures of my life? And he said, yes. I said, well, I'm young and healthy now, so if I keep hitting myself all over my body with a hammer, I'll cause a lot of pain now. That will save me a lot of pain later, right?
And he
got upset at that fact. He knew that wasn't a real question.
You were a snarky intellectual brat.
Yeah, most of us were.
Okay, then that leads me to the question about your dad. Your dad had to think that his young son, especially as you moved into college, was a thinker. A guy who critically assessed a lot of stuff. So how did he explain the direction you were headed? Did he think you were just being bamboozled?
He didn't explain it. It was a terrible trauma for him. It was a horrible suffering for him. When I announced to him that I wanted to convert, he said, I think that if you had told me you were an atheist, I would be less shocked. He sent me to Calvin College, of all places, and that's where I exited Calvinism and entered Catholicism. I sympathize with that. We had a lot of arguments, not all of them healthy and happy, but some of them. And after a couple of years, he accepted me personally and my path personally, even though he never converted or agreed with Catholic theology.
He didn't try to reason why you would do this?
Oh, yeah, in a lot of arguments. Some of the arguments are in that book, From Calvinist to Catholic. So you can get at least a sample of them there. And that helps. Argument's a funny thing. In itself, it's perfect. It's like a sword that's really sharp. But all of us are very clumsy, and we use swords very badly. So arguments often do more harm than good, even though they're designed to do more good than harm. And we had some bad arguments and some good arguments, and some things were clarified. He understood that Catholicism, if I embraced it, was not quite as bad. It was wrong, but it wasn't quite as satanic as he used to think.
He had some trust in your ability to assess things reasonably?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay. Will you stay with me, Dr. Grafe? Okay, can you do that? We got to take a quick hard break, and then we will be right back. My guest, Dr. Peter Krafe, the book, a fabulous book, I got to tell you, a lot of great stuff, From Calvinist to Catholic. He doesn't mention my name one time in it, so I think in the revised version, I'm going to see what we can do about that. My guest, Dr. Peter Krafe, a gentleman I've admired for many, many years. his book, From Calvinist to Catholic. It's a conversion story, but it's more than that. It's filled with wonderful life insights, beautiful turns of the phrases, lots of humor, good stuff. He says in here, though, I was a little offended. He said, one of the best decisions in my life was not to take any courses in sociology or psychology. Try not to take that personal, but I think I know what he meant. Dr. Grafe, how has psychology kind of really undercut the beauty of a faith-filled thinking?
I love tough questions like that. Two answers. One, in practice, psychology has been abused by its users who gravitate naturally towards a secularist ideology. But in a deeper sense, there's a line in one of C.S. Lewis's novels, Vanity of Strength. There's a tough-minded old scientist named Hengist. He's a chemist. The protagonist, Mark, is a sociologist. Mark's being suckered in by this evil organization. And he explains to Hengist that, well, it's because I'm loyal to the science of sociology. And Hengist says, there's no such thing as the science of sociology. It's not a science. Why isn't it science? Because you can't study people that way. You can't know them. You can only get to know them. That's a crucial distinction. In German, it's Kennen versus Wissen. And in French, it's connaître versus savoir. Personal knowledge versus impersonal knowledge. You can't pin a person to a wall like a butterfly.
Is this why I'm struggling so much in my career here?
Because you're not doing that, and most of the other psychologists are, yeah, so you're not being rewarded, yeah. You're helping people rather than theories.
You said something in the book. You said, basically, logic and reason were not your main steps towards the faith. You said heart before head. Explain that.
Well, before in the sense of causal priority, not necessarily before in the sense of stuff, content. I read a lot of stuff, a lot of Catholic theology, a lot of arguments, pro and con. But the thing that moves us the most is always the heart, because the heart pumps blood to the brain, and the brain can't think without that blood. That's why the secret of discernment for every good psychologist, especially Catholic psychologists, I know a number of very good Jesuit psychologists, they say a key verse is John 7:17, when the Pharisees asked Jesus, how can we possibly understand your teaching and this claim that you get it from God whom you call your Father? Jesus says, if your will were to do the will of my Father, you would understand my teaching and that it comes from him. Now, will is equivalent to heart here. So it's the heart or the will that is the captain of the ship, and the intellect equally valuable, but not as prior, is like the navigator. The captain ought to listen to the navigator, but the captain can say to the navigator, shut up and throw the charts away if he wants to, and we often do that.
I want to be selfish enough to keep your time with me and ask my questions, but there is a woman. If you can stay, we won't be taking another break for about 5 minutes, but if you can stay after that, she would like to talk to you, because she called in immediately. You're getting more calls than I do. A little offensive here, but I'm strong enough to take it. Would you be able to take a question after the break from Pamela as you and I talk a little more?
Yeah, as long as it has limits.
Did you ever have an oh no moment? My wife said when she was coming to the church, she spent about a year going, oh no, oh no, oh no. You ever have any of those?
By oh no, do you mean I realized I made a mistake? Or by oh no, do you mean I didn't realize it was going to be this difficult?
Or oh no, meaning I don't know if I really want to become Catholic, but it seems like the truth is tugging relentlessly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Almost every strong Catholic convert feels like he's in waves that are half ebb tide and half flood tide. Once in a while, the thing is very clear. One thing is totally rejected, and the other thing is totally accepted, but that's very rare. Usually, gee, these things look good about Catholicism, but those things don't.
Mm-hmm.
And all those great saints, all those great sinners. Look at all the good the church has done in the world. Look at all the bad things it's done in history. Yeah, there's a natural conflict to any open-minded person between the good stuff and the bad stuff.
C.S. Lewis said that no defense of the faith seems more fuzzy. No doctrine of the faith seems more fuzzy than after he has just successfully defended it.
Mm.
Over the years.
There's a real humble man, unlike us.
Well, he can't compete with us.
I will confess here now to Father Ray. I lack that humility because I cannot honestly utter that statement that Lewis did. After I have, I think, successfully defended a doctrine of the faith, I think it's more certain to me rather than less because I have reliance on my own mind, which I shouldn't have. But I'm at least not such a fool that I don't recognize that I'm such a fool.
That's what it is. Yeah, as long as you got the insight to it, that's the big first step. May not do anything about it, but you got the insight and you take some credit for that.
Yeah.
What was the biggest obstacle? Something that, I don't want to say it threatened to keep you from becoming Catholic, but it was a hurdle.
Well, the biggest personal hurdle was I didn't want to hurt my parents and all my Calvinist friends. But the biggest theoretical hurdle was the whole sacramental system. I thought it was mechanical, external, materialistic, automatic. Push a button, get salvation. That's how it appears often to the outside. The church as a visible institution. It says, if you go to confession and you say these words and mean them, then your sins are forgiven and you can go to heaven. And if not, not. I thought that was absurd. And Catholics said that Jesus is really present in the Eucharist, not just in a symbolic way, but really. So you can pray to him there. You can adore him. I said, that's ridiculous idolatry. That's not only idolatry, but it's stupid.
It's always
amazed me. Later, I came to realize that it was beautiful.
It's amazed me about my my Protestant friends, who I think are kind of gracious with us Catholics because they don't believe that that is, but yet at the same time, they're still willing to call us Christians. And I say, you know, if you really want to look at it, if we're Christians, we're nutty Christians.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the same kind of argument as the famous Lord, Liar, or Lunatic argument with Christ. If he's not the Lord, then he's either the biggest lunatic or the biggest liar who ever lived. And if the Catholic Church isn't the voice of Christ, having his unique authority through apostolic succession, then it's not just one among many Christian denominations. It's the most idolatrous and arrogant one of all.
I was listening to a talk from a guy named John MacArthur. MacArthur's a real high-profile media Baptist. MacArthur said that the Catholic Church is the greatest cult in the world, and his audience of several thousand erupted in applause.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking they should be saddened if that's true. They shouldn't erupt in applause. Can you stay with me just a little bit more? Pamela wants to talk to you.
Yeah, sure I can.
All right. Dr. Peter Kraft is my guest here on The Doctor Is In. Got two doctors coming at you. You should feel your IQ swelling as we speak. This is Dr. Ray. I'm delighted and I'm privileged to get to talk personally with one of my long-range mentors. Well, I can't really say mentors. That's a little linguistically insensitive. Percenters in the faith, Dr. Peter Kraft, who's most recent book, From Calvinist to Catholic, absolutely highly recommend, not only for the personal insights he offers and the apologetics information that he offers, but so many great quips that he throws in there from all directions. Dr. Grafe, we have a mom here who jumped at the chance to talk to you. You got a minute to talk to her?
Sure do.
Pamela, are you there?
I am, Dr. Ray.
Thank you for
so
the call, dear. You
about it with the go ahead.
Go ahead. You talk to Hello? Dr. Kraft. I will just sit and listen.
Okay. Well, Dr. Ray, I just want to say when you tease us about a guest, I immediately said it's Dr. Kraft.
You knew that, huh? I'm
did.
Transparent.
you know, I it just came. It was So anyway, Dr. Crave, it is such an honor to speak with you, and I'm currently enjoying your Food for the Soul Year C. It's so insightful and brilliant, and just, you're amazing. So anyway, I homeschooled my kids, most importantly, to help them fall in love with Jesus, to know and to love our Catholic faith, and they all did well, except my 21-year-old daughter, Grace, is a very strong-willed, stubborn person, and yes, Dr. Ray, we have spoken about her strong-willedness when you're in Rapid City. Okay, so she's stubborn. Will that work?
Is it genetic?
<She's> stubborn. And she's adopted, so we can't even go by that. So anyway, but because of a boyfriend who is, and she, we went to daily mass, pray daily rosary, daily divine mercy chapel. I mean, very involved in our
yeah,
church.
Soaked her in the Catholic stuff.
Oh, she marinated, yeah. And that's what worries me the most. She knows her faith, and I'm so worried about walking away from the faith when she knows the truth. That's
so you're asking, you're basically, Pamela, you're asking Dr. Craves, just to give you a few insertions into her thinking regarding the direction she's taken, right?
Yes, yes, and a little bit more. Because of a boyfriend who is Calvinist, she's walked away. And from the church, they plan to marry outside the church, and we've told her that we won't be able to participate in the wedding. I know it's not church teaching, but we do have to follow our conscience. Mm-hmm. And I've told her the two reasons are that I have to choose Jesus over anyone, even a member of my own family, and also because love.
Well, let's get you to Dr. Craft. Okay, Derek?
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you didn't expect better psychology from me than from Dr. Ray. But my two instinctive answers to that question are, one, a quote from St. Faustina's diary. Suffering is God's special gift to special people. If you have a special suffering, you know that God has a special love for you. Because nobody gets to heaven except through suffering. And all the sufferings that you can imagine pale into insignificance compared with the sufferings of somebody that you love so much. I think Jesus' physical suffering on the cross was not nearly as great as his spiritual suffering in Gethsemane, because probably in Gethsemane, there's an indication that the devil was there. The devil probably tempted him with all the people that were going to hell despite all that he did for them. And for Jesus to see all of those beloved children of his suffering eternally, that was almost, that was, we would just disappear. That would just crack us up. And that's how it feels when you apparently lose a child. It feels as if you're turning into dust. Your heart is almost stopped beating. There's no suffering like that. And here you are. Your faith is strong. You're hurting, but you're talking in a reasonable and Catholic way to a psychologist and a philosopher. So you've gone through step one. All you got to do is go through however many more steps God has for you. And it's not going to be easy. There's no easy solution, which is why God doesn't usually answer prayers in the way that we want him to. Because we need toughening up. Even when we are tough, we need much more toughening up. Because that light of his that's going to shine on us in heaven is so incredibly bright that it's going to hurt us unless we've got light-loving walls all around us. And that's what God is doing in toughening us up.
Dr. Grafe, do you have words for her on what is obviously self-blame?
Well, we're all to blame, in a sense, indirectly, for everything, because we're all connected in a body, in an organic body. And every sin that every one of us commits weakens that body. And every act of love that every one of us chooses to do strengthens that whole body in ways that we can't see until heaven. So there's some truth in the fact that you feel guilty for that, but not individually, not personally. It's not that you did the wrong thing to her. And if you had only done something else when she was 15 years old, things would be better. That's not true. That's an illusion. But you do have to confess that it's your weakness, and that's common to humanity ever since the fall. It's your weakness that failed. And what you failed doing, Jesus will do, because he's much more powerful than you are, infinitely more powerful than you are. She's only 21. Her road is just beginning. She's got a long road ahead. He is still the master, even though she doesn't call him the master. So it's hard to trust her after her bad judgment, but it's necessary to trust him.
You have parallels.
I trust in you. Those are the best words in my life.
You have parallels, Dr. Kraft. You were Calvinist at 21.
Oh, yeah, but I didn't reject the whole faith. I just rejected the Catholic Church, but I didn't reject Jesus.
Well, she's not rejecting Jesus either. She's rejecting her Catholic Church.
Yeah, the fullness of Jesus. Yeah, okay. And it almost always has something to do with sex. The sexual revolution has done more harm than any other revolution since the fall, I think.
In passing, yeah, you say that in the book also. In passing, Mom mentioned the boyfriend, which throws a heavy emotional and perhaps physical link in all this.
Oh, yeah.
I was really, I listened to one of your, wasn't an 8-track, but it was a CD series on 7 reasons why you believe the Catholic Church is who she said she is. And at one point you said, very succinctly, history. You said history.
Yeah.
As you look back on that, obviously it didn't have a whole lot of leverage with your dad, and I'm sure you brought it up. What was it so much about history that moved you?
Facts. Continuity. The teachings of the Catholic Church didn't start at a sudden time in history like Calvinism or Lutheranism. They started with Christ, and they percolated through the apostles who ordained successors, and the bishops kept teaching the same thing, and there was no fundamental reformation for 1,500 years. Why? If all those Catholic, distinctively Catholic doctrines are false, why didn't anybody protest for 1,500 years? What, Mary, the Mother of God? What, Christ really present in the Eucharist? What, the Church having infallible authority from the apostles? How ridiculous. Nobody said that. So I said, the Holy Spirit can't be sleeping for 1,500 years. And it didn't take Luther and Calvin to wake him up. So if Catholicism is what the Church has believed for 1,500 years, I better believe it too, because that's my connection with Christ.
I'm presently reading a book by a guy named Lee Strobel. It's called The Case for Christ. It's an expanded version of one of his earlier books. And he interviews a whole bunch of very high-level theologians and scripture scholars, a whole bunch of them, all of whom come from a general evangelical Protestant view. And there's the question I'd like to leave you with, because it's always flummoxed me. You looked at history and you were convinced. Obviously, these guys, in their knowledge, must know of history, unless they're totally ignoring it, which doesn't sound like they are, given what they know. Why does history, you think, not move so many, especially these very high-level educational folks?
Well, I'm going to insult you here, although I don't mean to do it personally, because they're too psychological and not philosophical enough, because they worry too much about their friends and what their friends are going to say and how many nice Protestant friends they have and how foreign and strange Catholicism seems, rather than what are the facts of history? What really happened? Not how do I feel about it? Not what am I going to do about it? Not what is this to me, but what is this?
Do you think there's a personal, heavy personal component? Yeah.
Yeah. And well, there's enough in the Bible to make you a Catholic. I mean, ask Scott Hahn, best Bible scholar I know. It was basically a Bible that made him a Catholic.
Had a lady call the show once, young woman, said they were converting because she had gone to a fundamentalist college and they had a course on church history. And she said, I couldn't read church history there without looking into the Catholic Church. I said, well, wait a minute. Your props know church history better than you do. Why aren't they being moved? And she said, similar to what you just said. There's personal components here.
Always. Yeah.
Can't shake that daggone fallen nature, can we?
Well, not in this life. That's why most of us are going to need a lot of purgatory.
Well, I don't know if you heard this, but I have mentioned at the top of my program that I'm the only show in all of Catholic media that can take days off your purgatory because I can be so irritating to listen to.
That's a good salesman's pitch.
Dr.
So we're just talking off air now, right? Or are we still on air?
No, we're quoting everything you're saying, pal. God bless
my
you.
Question.
It is a delight always to talk to you, and when I do, I want just more of it. The banter, the persiflage, the badinage is...
Well, have me on again sometime.
I would absolutely... It's a date. It is flat out a date, and I'm getting tired of picking up the tab, but we'll make it happen. Thank you so much. Again, the book, From Calvinist to Catholic, Dr. Peter Kraft. Fabulous book. I read it twice. I wish he had a scratch-and-sniff version, but he doesn't, so I had to actually read it. No pictures. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. I got it all marked up here. Dr. Kraft, God bless you. God bless your family, your kids. You still body surfing?
Very occasionally. I'm 88 now.
Well, you can get training wheels on those things, I think.
I heard Father Fessio last year. Being interviewed, and he was complaining about how crazy the world was, and the interviewer said, if you think the world is so horrible, how come there's a smile on your face and you're cracking so many jokes? And he said, I'm 87 years old. I'm going to get out of jail card pretty darn quick. I'm getting out of this insane asylum.
It's the spiritual version of get off my lawn. Dr. Kraft, God bless you. God hold you and your family, and we will talk again. This is Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
When one has real love for another, not mere emotional attachment, that one moves out of the isolation of his own existence to know the other's thoughts, emotions, sufferings, and even beyond this, to know the other's reality. The illusion, though, is that loving is a natural capacity, easily and automatically acquired. This is an illusion reinforced by the popular concept of falling in love, a term implying a complete lack of volition. Fundamentally, though, the notion of love's facility is not true, for the whole process of coming out of ourselves is not easy or automatic. Now, especially, in our climatically controlled, screen-dominated worlds, we exist within our own spaces, within our own minds, and those who are the most difficult to see become the most difficult to love. GuadalupeWorkers.org.
I don't think we've replaced our siding since we moved in 20 years ago, but I'm sure it's still fine, right?
We better call Mighty Dog Roofing of Ann Arbor.
Damaged siding can cause mold buildup and weaken your home structure. Protect your family by calling local Catholics Dan and Mary Flanagan at Mighty Dog Roofing for a free inspection of your siding, roof, or windows. Mighty Dog Roofing, 734-224-4916. That's 734-224-4916.
I don't know if you could tell it. Certainly enjoy talking to that man. He's hard to keep up with. The guy has an encyclopedic knowledge about so many things. He's a philosopher. I saw a thing in some of my assessment days, and I don't know, Dr. Crape would probably debate this, but they took the IQs of various professions, and philosophers scored the highest. The highest IQs. I think psychologists were, I don't know if we were possibly right down there with maybe Congress. I don't know. Anyway, I really drug it on toward the end of the program. So I do appreciate you sticking with me as I enjoyed my chance to visit with Dr. Kraft. He talks as he writes. He is a delight to converse with. So I got to go. Coming up on about 20 seconds left here on the Doctor's End. I appreciate your company. Good Lord permitting. Tomorrow we will go back to taking your calls. And we did have some calls here, too, for Dr. Kraft. We get to one of them. And I usurped the rest of the time rather selfishly. I don't think it's a real big sin. It's kind of maybe self-absorbed. Appreciate so very much your company. Thank you, Andrew Krucek. Thanks, Eric Dumont. And as Dr. Kraft so aptly implied, the saintly walk, holding God's hand. In the end, that's the only walk that will be.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.